Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
This episode of Filthy Casuals is brought to you by HelloFresh. Use the code CASUALS to get 50% off your first two boxes today.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Good morning, video games. Welcome to Filthy Casuals, a podcast about video games hosted by three very kind and extremely knowledgeable boys. Thank you for joining us for another week. My name is Tommy Dasilo, and as always,
my name is Ben Vanel, and it's a slightly later and slightly different recording time than usual.
Mm. Well, and but slightly earlier as well.
What? Excuse me?
It's all things.
Yes.
Yeah, we're doing it
time
later.
Time is a flat circle.
Oh, yeah. Hell, man. That's a really cool thing that's going to get less interesting in its second series that you just said.
That's coming back, by the way.
True
Detective. After like 2 years off.
Yeah, after they fucked it in the second season.
Yeah.
Oh, brother.
Anyway, what do you got for us?
Episode 123. Adam, what do you see?
Oh my god, a man floundering for no reason.
I wasn't going to do it this episode.
But
why?
E is still just the easiest sound to rhyme.
Yeah.
Tree. Mate. Three. You already used that one.
Did I not rhyme? I believe I did.
He did rhyme.
Yeah, but if the Beatles are going like, I want to hold your, the hand.
Yeah.
No, we got there in the end. We're a good band.
Yeah.
Band, it did rhyme.
Yes. Because the Beatles improvised everything at the start of their podcast.
Yes. Can we have a suggestion? Ooh, I heard the beach.
Austin Powers was in the Beatles.
Yeah. Adam Knox is here as well.
Yeah, hello.
Yes.
Cool.
It's like the Monday before this comes out. So we're recording this a little because of time
constraints.
Restrictions. Mm. So if there's any news that's come out during the week, hey, it's a normal episode and we've missed it.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes.
And boy, we, you know what, even if we weren't recording this early, we are just floundering through a big old month of nothing.
Yes.
This we should have branded this whole, the Filthy Casuals month of nothing.
Yeah. Well, there's like Metal Gear Survive came out and I want to play that. It doesn't seem like it's good, but I want to try it. But
That's an interesting story, I think. Obviously, all the Kojima stuff.
Yeah.
Like,
it will be interesting when we've played it.
When it shows up in the post.
Yeah, so you've ordered it from an online retailer that, what, is like overseas or something?
Yeah.
It seems like this thing is taking 6 to 8 weeks to get itself to you.
It is on the back of a mule in Tibet right now.
Nice.
And it will be here when the crow strikes three or some mythical. When the
you
jade
had a
monkey,
go at me
yeah.
for not being able to do a rhyme. That was just a sentence, man.
It's like a mythical. If it would. Yeah, it doesn't matter.
And same thing, undone by the number three.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Mm. Very
hey,
true.
Three in the thing that you said, three in the thing that Adam said, three. People that host
right.
this podcast.
Now it's happening again. Hey, the third right. time it's happening that someone is, for no reason, setting themselves up into a position where they can't think of. Yeah, there's not a lot of games out at the moment, but there's a lot of people out there who listen to this podcast who have sent us some questions, and we're going to field a couple.
Yeah, more than a couple. Maybe three.
I reckon we might.
I can nail that one.
We're back. We've taken control over that monstrous number.
Yes, broken the curse.
But yeah, we did a bit of soliciting on the Facebook page, and we also had a few emails that have been sitting there just clogging up that storage for a long time.
I mean, honestly, we were waiting for a day, for a rainy day. When we needed some material.
And when it rains, it pours.
Yes.
It is bucketing right now.
Yeah.
So we'll, you know, this is good. We've finally got a, you know, spare block of time on the calendar.
Yep.
Not much going on games-wise where we can answer these emails.
Yes.
We'll get through all of them. And then next week, we'll be fucked again in the exact same position.
Yeah, we'll
with
have
once again nothing to talk about.
No backup plan either.
No backup. Yeah. What are we going to do next week?
I'll probably end up playing San Andreas by then.
Mm-hmm.
I'm playing Vice City at the moment, and I'm going to go through those PS2 GTA games.
Yeah. Mm. I actually, before we get to the questions, I have played a game that I at least hadn't played before.
Oh, fuck yeah.
It's not a new game, but it is a game that I'm liking so far. Yakuza 0.
Yes.
Which I think we all kind of saw when it was... It's because this is a remaster kind of reboot thing to get people into the series before 6 comes out.
Now, I've never played Yakuza negative 1, so am I still going to be able to enjoy this?
Yakuza 0, and yes. I believe it's pronounced Yakuza.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I believe it's pronounced Yakety Sax.
Oh, hell yeah.
It is a new game from last year,
right,
or like from the year before in Japan, but... yeah, it's set before all the other ones.
Right.
And then they did remaster 1 and 2, and those
right,
are the Kiwami ones.
Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, we, none of us have any experience with this series.
I was really interested in this when it came out, but it just came out when so much other shit was...
Yeah.
Like, this was right around that heavy Zelda everything, and then Persona 5 took over my life for a while.
Yeah, totally.
And then 6 is coming out soon?
In March.
Right, okay.
Or maybe later. I think it might have gotten delayed.
Right.
So you've only got 5 more to get through before then.
Yeah, fuck. You bring up Persona 5, and that is a game I thought of instantly when I started playing this because it's set in Tokyo, and it's incredibly well realized. It feels like Tokyo in a way that Persona 5 didn't, or in a different way than Persona 5 did, I guess I should say. Persona 5 was kind of like this really minimal, packed down version of Tokyo that still conveyed it perfectly, I feel like.
Yeah, there's big kind of like ends of streets that you just physically cannot go down.
Totally.
Which, look, for anyone who hasn't been there, not to out myself as a real jet setter here, that's not the case in the real Tokyo.
Yes.
If you see a street, you can just walk down it.
Wow, now that is a sort of local knowledge that you only get from someone who's truly been to a place. You can read all the books you want.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm going to pull you up on that. Some of them were no through roads.
You can still walk down them.
That's true. You just button up against a brick wall.
You're not blocked by an invisible hand.
That's true.
Or
that's
a cat
true.
Going, go the other way instead.
Let's go to sleep.
Yeah.
It's 3 p.m.
Yeah, but that road's pretty long. Yeah. Fucking let's go to sleep.
And you worked for 3 hours at that florist.
Yeah.
So you must be bushed.
And to be fair, we're going to take on a bad guy in about a week and a half time. So probably good for you to get some sleep while you can.
Have a bit of rest. Put this dumb contraption on your face and you'll be able to eventually sleep.
Nah, time for some rest. And oh, by the way, in your dreams, you get fucking harassed by this weird goblin cunt who's like got you locked in a cell.
Why are you so tired all the time? Yakuza 0 as well, though, like Persona 5 set modern day. Yakuza 0, 80s Japan.
Yeah.
Which is fucking cool-ass Japan as
well. At least that's where you and I first went.
Yeah, yes. It feels like long ago now. Mm-hmm. But no, Tokyo in Yakuza 0 is much more realistic. It's bigger scale. You can look down the streets and you can see. It's not like stylized in like the visual way that Persona 5 was either. It's almost, you know, a realistic depiction.
Right.
And it's fucking great. I'm only like an hour or two in. Like, I've just played the start, the prologue, and I'm starting to get more abilities. And I'm still, I think, in the tutorial phase.
Right.
Yeah.
But mamma mia, I'm loving it. Like, it's so cool. It has this great over the...
That famous Japanese phrase. Yes. Yes. Mamma mia. Well, I guess it is. Mario is the most famous mamma mia person.
Yeah, bro.
That's a good point. So, is Italian culture now Japanese culture? By virtue of the fact that one of their most famous characters is an Italian?
Yes.
Does Italy only exist within the mind of Japan?
They both have similar shapes, the countries, sort of.
Yes, you're
they
right.
Do.
You are
they're
right.
They're the long sort of curves.
Yes, the Japan...
The second boot.
Yeah.
Two shoes.
It's a big guy squatting over the world. God, I believe he's called. Yeah, Japan and Italy, famously allied.
I think it was Axis, but anyway. It
depends on your perspective.
The thing I like about this as well, just purely in the title, I fucking love a thing called Zero.
Yes.
Yeah, yes.
As a prologue.
Yes.
That's really cool to me. And so you don't need any context from the rest of the games for this one.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Well, it's before him.
Yeah. Yeah, it would be strange if you did.
So what's the sort of setup of the story that you've seen?
You're a dude who's in the Yakuza.
Yakuza.
Your name is not Zero. You have a name. It's a Japanese name, not Italian. It's not Mario, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, you're like a middle-tier guy in the Japanese mafia, and you're also working on the side for some loan shark guys, and you're like doing their heavy work. and you beat up a guy, and then you find out the guy, he dead, and you've been framed.
Oh.
And so all your upper level guys are like kind of, you know, getting down on you, and you're like, bro, I didn't do it. I don't know what's going on.
Mm.
And so you're clearly getting involved in these some kind of political machination within the Japanese mafia.
Right.
And you're also singing karaoke.
Right.
Beating people up on the street. And there's like a crazy old guy who's trying to get you to like fight in some underground boxing ring. And you're, yeah, doing a whole bunch of different stuff already. And it's all really fun. Like,
is
it's
it,
just.
Is it linear? Like, are you doing all these things in a set order, or is it kind of open and you can, like, do the karaoke or the boxing, like, whenever? Do you. Are they, like, side questy things, or.
I believe it's going to open up. I believe that is the gameplay loop of this game is, like, you'll try a bunch of stuff and then it'll all open up and you can do it in whatever order you like. Sort of like Persona, I guess.
It's not like Grand Theft Auto style massive city though, walk anywhere. It's more segmented than that, I think.
Believe so. And again, I'm still just at the start.
Yeah.
And it has been very much like follow this guy while the story unfolds around you and you get to do some things like, yeah, the karaoke bits like with your mate who's kind of talking to you about this stuff that's going on that's relevant to the story.
Boring. Let's go do some karaoke.
Yeah. But it also, it feels like it's going to be that kind of game. Like you're going to be doing this story stuff and then it's like, boring story. Let's go and fucking do some weird
shit.
Mini game kind of thing.
Yeah, cool.
Which is, I believe, what the rest of the games are like as well.
It sounds, yeah, I've sort of been aware of this series for a while. I think, yeah, probably when this one came out made me kind of look up the series and go, fuck, this looks really cool. Why have I never played this before? But
totally.
Like exactly what you were saying, Adam, it was impossible to fit anything in.
Yeah.
And yeah, we were talking about maybe doing, here's a bit of a behind the curtain glimpse.
Yes.
We were going to do this a bit later in the week. We
right.
thought we might be able to do this a bit later in the week.
Yeah.
I was planning to grab this tomorrow
to
play before the next time we record, which I will still do, but yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm going to win the lottery one day. If we're just talking about things that we haven't done, this podcast can be anything. I want to play this as well. I really want to find the time to... Because, yeah, it seems like something where they're all big games, long games, and they're all like the sort of thing where I want to dedicate a bit of time to it.
Totally.
When going into it. So, yeah, I want
to... And they seem pretty easy to drop in and out of, possibly. Like, I get the impression from talking to you about it that it's pretty arcadey.
A little bit, yes.
In a sense,
And maybe, again, it is because it's early on and it is kind of segmented because it's teaching you all the mechanics of the game.
Yeah.
But I think so. I think that's the case. It has a really fun kind of sense of humor to it as well. And kind of... A fun feeling. Like the music in it's all like this over the top, like rock and roll.
Yeah.
Like Tekken, you know, like intro scene kind of music. It's all very over the top, but I do feel like it has a sense of self-awareness about it.
Okay, cool.
And it just seems really lighthearted and silly. And it has this kind of Infernal Affairs, you know, like Departed, silly kind of convoluted mafia story at the same time.
Yeah, great. So I really love that kind of stuff. It sounds like... It sounds like it's touching on both gameplay-wise and style-wise similar sort of stuff to Sleeping Dogs, almost.
Yes. The combat is a little bit old-fashioned. It's not your Sleeping Dogs Arkham-style, you know, hit-counter kind of thing.
Yeah.
It's a little bit more old-fashioned. It's more like an actual old-school beat-em-up.
Right.
But... I'm okay with it so far.
So it's not like combos, it's just like button mash.
It is it's combos and maybe dodges and stuff. It's just not as sophisticated.
Right.
It's not that style that is so... It's all the same now, style.
The
Arkham. The Arkham series. It's just a little bit different. So I'm coming to grips with that, but I'm still enjoying it. And I'm just pumped to play more of it.
Here's something I've been meaning to ask you that I don't know if I ever did. You went to Hong Kong last year.
I did.
And having played Sleeping Dogs,
yes.
Did you find it to be realistic?
Did you bash anyone in the head with your car door? Yeah.
Were there any dogs that were asleep on the street?
Did you become a filthy double agent where you were in the mafia and also...
Was my storyline kind of shit?
No, but did you... Because that was the thing I remember reading about that game at the time. Like, it's a pretty spot-on portrayal of Hong Kong. And... Playing that game is what's made me want to go to Hong Kong.
Yeah.
So did you... Yeah, is it... Do you think it... Do you consider it to be a good representation?
I absolutely do.
Right.
In the same way that we would probably think Persona...
Yeah.
Is spiritually and more abstractly a good version of Tokyo.
Yeah.
this was, but it also was more specific. It was more like the Yakuza version of Tokyo. Sleeping Dogs as Hong Kong was like pretty realistic, pretty dead on, had the same kind of like geography and landscape and the buildings and all that kind of stuff as well.
Yeah, that was definitely my favorite thing about that game, like walking through the markets and stuff where you did just, I don't know, something about it, just even without having been there, like you can just tell, just has this feeling of like, this feels real. Like, this feels very specific in a way that it's not just making a broad stroke. Like, I bet this specific market, like, actually exists in some form.
Same thing with Watch Dogs 2 and San Francisco.
Yeah, right.
I've never been to San Francisco, but it, by all accounts, is very, like, obviously not exactly the same because that would be a nightmare.
Yes.
It's a squished sort of evocative version of it, but it's pretty close.
Yes, totally, totally. Like, it has, there's a bit in Sleeping Dogs where you're, like, just driving down a city street and then on the right is a temple. Yep. And you can go into the temple and you learn some like fucked up martial arts there. Yep. But that's what Hong Kong is like. You're driving down this crazy city street and there's a lush little, you know, garden with a temple in it. So
when you want to date girls, they make you go on a fucking parkour quest with them for 5 minutes. Yes.
I kind of feel it sounds almost like the city itself is a character. It's an interesting concept. There's some other news stuff that did actually happen since the last episode as well. Speaking of long-ass Japanese games.
Yes.
Final Fantasy 15, which we all liked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So there's a new version of it out that's just got all the DLC called the Royal Edition.
Right.
And then there's a PC version that's called Final Fantasy 15 Windows Edition.
Oh, great.
Which is a really fucking silly name, but
great.
I love it.
Great.
With that, if you buy it on Steam, you get a little Half-Life costume, Gordon Freeman's
suit. Oh, yeah, I saw that,
which is fucking rad.
Yep.
And I kind of, it makes me want to get that, but I'm not going to, but... The Royal Edition has all the DLC, and they've said that they're doing another series of DLC things.
Yes.
Another four of them in the same vein as the ones that have already happened, which none of us have played any of.
No. Yeah.
And I like, this just makes me go, oh, I'm going to wait another year.
Right.
And then play through that game again in another year, probably.
Yes.
Yeah, crazy that stuff's still coming out for it, right? Because it was end of 2016. It was like November 2016,
And so then that season pass they sold with it had those three ones that focused on each of your... buddies expanded their stories, and these are four more of a similar thing, but about the first one's about Arden, who was the villain.
Yep.
There's probably one about Luna.
Yep.
He's like teased at that, and then two others.
Yeah.
About you know,
the garage girl.
The car.
And the car. Yes.
And were people into, do you have any idea, like, the was the DLC that's out, has it been well received?
So I think it pretty much exactly the same as the original game. Where some people are like, yeah, this is great. And some people are like, this is the worst shit I've ever seen. You know?
Right.
Like, it was a pretty divisive game. And I don't think any of it has really done anything to address a lot of what people had issues with.
Yeah.
Right.
Including the pacing of it, because all of these are separate.
Yeah.
I think you just go into them from the menu.
Yeah.
And so I want to go through them all, but there's something about not having all of them there that makes me want to hold off on it.
Yeah.
So these all kind of, they sort of take place off in... separate places, and they're kind
so
of...
So during the story, but like, you know, like during the story, you get separated from your buddies at some point.
Yeah.
It's that
right.
That is, it's the ones that exist.
On.
And then there's also a multiplayer thing, which I'm not really sure how that works. It's all really interesting. I want to play it, but I don't want to have to go back to that game three times.
Yeah.
Going back through it a second time, I will do, but I'm not playing it three times.
Yeah.
So
speaking of DLC, like the... We talked about it when it came out, but the Zelda DLC, I played it for this and then I have not gone back to it. Like, I really, like what you're saying where it's like off while this other stuff is happening. That's kind of like some version of that is really what I was hoping that would be. Like,
right.
I know we got new shrines and a new dungeon and everything, but yeah, like, I don't know.
It was good. It was the same stuff. I think, like we said at the time as well, the thing about that game was finding new things.
The discovery.
Yeah.
And that DLC didn't really do anything.
And I had really built myself up to think that, like, it was going to maybe, like, take place, like, before, like, you were going to go back and so see this world in a different context.
Yeah,
or maybe you would play as, you know, one of the champions or four of the champions. Like, I really thought it was going to be... a lot more, like, have a lot more going on and really take place separate to what this world is, other than just, like, add a couple things in. But I think I don't know, I'm starting to... I kind of have this thing where, like, if you like something, like, you have to go in on the DLC and you're sort of like letting yourself down if you've like gotten it and like not, if you devoted a lot of time to the full game, you're sort of, you know, you're shortchanging yourself by not committing a good deal of time to the DLC.
Yeah.
And I think I'm starting to realize like, I don't know, it's just I find it very hard to go back to, even if it's good and fun and it's still doing a lot of the same stuff that was fun. Once I've finished it and kind of put it away mentally, it's just kind of hard to go back to.
Completely agree. Yeah. Yeah.
Mario and Rabbids, I haven't even touched that.
Yeah.
The Mario thing, I refuse to put that fucking cartridge in the Switch.
Yeah, same. We haven't talked about that yet, really, the balloon stuff, right?
Have any of us played it?
No, but we've seen the reactions, and the reactions are pretty much all negative.
Well, my reaction is to not care at all.
Yes.
All of our reactions is I can't be bothered playing this part of this game that we all loved.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I don't know. It just doesn't seem...
I mean, it's even... Like, it's weird that it being... Getting a bad response is barely even a story because, like, no one gave a fuck about it to begin. It got announced and people were like, oh, whatever. Like,
yeah.
I guess if you were getting it new and that was in there, it's like, okay, that's okay, that's cool that that's in there.
Yeah.
But it's not something that's going to, like, drive you to go back and turn it back on again and sink hours into.
I think people are just like... Look, let me love the game. I don't want to have to worry about this thing that seems disappointing. I'm not even going to address it.
Just a weird thing where it's like something that just should have been in there in the first place.
It's a problematic thing about Mario. Yes. And you know what? I can separate the art from the second part of the art that comes along.
Yeah. I mean, like, I would have just preferred a big, cool costume pack or something.
Oh, yeah, same. Yeah.
Or fucking more levels, motherfucker.
I mean, yes. Oh, yeah, I should say, you said we all loved it. I didn't love it. Yeah.
Oh, right, that's true.
But I liked it.
But you should
have. And I would have loved... some kind of more substantial thing to play.
I guess at the same time, you can say this about literally every game almost. So it's a hard... Like Far Cry 5, they announced that DLC and I don't think we talked about that. There's a Vietnam thing, a thing where you go to Mars, and then Far Cry 3.
Right.
Yeah. So that's pretty good. Vietnam, like make it just a completely separate thing.
Yeah.
Almost like two Far Cry mini games.
I mean,
that you're getting. That sounds cool.
Yeah. You mentioned Mario Rabbids before. I'm looking forward to the next one of that, which is a new world and Donkey Kong being a character.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Because
yeah.
it's like, this is what I'm talking about. Okay. Hopefully it'll feel like brand new. I don't feel like I'm just retreading the thing that I'm already finished. It's like a whole new level, a different kind of character to get the grips of. But who knows? Maybe that's probably the test of whether I'm just fundamentally never going to be into DLC.
You know,
like if I start that and can't be fucked with it, then that'll be the lesson learned to not bother with this anymore.
Yeah.
Something I haven't really thought about before that's just kind of struck me is I really hate playing 80% of a game, dropping it for 4 months and going back to try and finish that 20%. I can't do that. And that is what even good DLC tends to feel
Absolutely.
Like.
Yes, you're right. Yeah, I've got maybe four things sitting there where, I have this thing where if I've enjoyed something, I feel like I owe it to myself and to the product to have finished all of it.
Right.
And sometimes it's like, it's fine to go, I really enjoyed this, I just got busy and fell off with it. But what I enjoyed was still really, really good. But once I've taken a break from something, it is, even if it's like, you're like, I want to finish this, I'm so close to the end.
Yeah.
Fuck, it's so hard to make yourself come back around to it, especially when there's new stuff kind of, you know, there to steal your attention as well.
Yes, yeah, totally.
I suppose the exception to that would be like the Telltale games and things that are episodic like that.
Yes.
That's a better model for doing this sort of thing, I suppose.
And I think it's probably because they're purpose-built to be episodic.
Yeah.
So that each episode does contain a full arc of a sort. So you have a sense of satisfaction and completion, but because they're so short, you do still want to keep playing them when they come out.
And it's not like with them... that by the sixth one you'll have forgotten mechanics from the first one because they're so simple to play. Like that's part of the problem is like this Mario and Rabbids DLC I assume will be increasing the difficulty above where it was by the end of the fourth level.
Yes.
So then the fifth one, I haven't played it in months.
Yeah.
I don't remember the ins and outs of this so I'm worse at the game now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So now I'm coming back to it with you giving me the hardest thing you've made where I'm at 50% of my capacity.
Right.
Yeah. So then what's your ideal DLC
like a sequel
totally that's what I was thinking like I can commit to a long game and I can play it all the way through and I can finish it if I like it but I'm also liking the pacing and the completion of the story and that kind of stuff
yeah
I don't tend to go in for DLC even if I've heard it's great I'm waiting for the sequel
It's mine's, like I said, a whole new area, or at the very least, if it's not going to be that, just a big bunch of like optional cosmetic changes that are going to like make it look and feel different enough so that when you boot it up again, it's like, oh, okay, I'm going to fuck around with this for another half hour. And it's like, oh, this, okay, it looks different like this.
Yeah. And you know what? It is different every time I've played a game when I've gotten like the Game of the Year edition or whatever and played that first. The DLC being in there is sick because, like, oh, the game is just bigger.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It coming to something later is probably the way to do it.
Yep.
And is the way I would do it probably still if it weren't for doing this podcast.
Yeah.
Right.
No, I agree.
Like, if there's going to be more something, I wouldn't have played Final Fantasy 15 yet. I wouldn't have played Resident Evil 7 when I did. You know, everything where it's like, there's definitely this DLC coming.
Yeah.
I would hold off on it.
And it's interesting because DLC is set up to avoid the problem of people on selling these games. But then it also, like you said, makes a compelling point for the opposite of that. Like they must see it actually negatively affects the sales when it first comes out. Like you can have a heap of people wait until a year down the track.
Waiting until there's this cheaper version of the game with everything.
With everything,
Yeah. I also wonder, well, I know for a fact our perspective is skewed, obviously, because of what we do.
Because we're fucking lunatics.
Yeah, and because we are of the age and like lifestyle where we have disposable income.
Yeah.
We spend a lot of it on games. There's got to be this great scenario where you're maybe a kid or you're someone who just doesn't have the money or maybe the time to play a lot of new games. But you got a game that you love and you played it all the way through and then a year later you're like, fuck, $20 more and I get to play another 3 hours of this game I loved? Perfect.
And then I think people, like if I was in the position, if I was, you know, 13 and didn't have any money, didn't have a job.
No pubes.
Yeah. So if I was basically the same as me now but 15 years ago, like that's where stuff like PUBG and Counter-Strike and all these multiplayer games come in where you've got an infinite amount and League of Legends and whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
That is probably more appealing because that sort of game didn't exist in the same way.
Yeah, yeah. Then.
I mean, I guess there was literally Counter-Strike, so never mind.
But like what you were saying about being a kid and like, you know, it being $20 more to extend the game a bit, I also think it goes the other way where it's like when you're that age, like your disposable income is at a premium. So
it's like,
would
fuck
almost
you,
be,
I'm not paying you $20 more for 3 years.
Right.
I would never have ended up doing any of that stuff when I was a kid because I just wouldn't have had the money and it would have really, really bummed me out. And like, I'm really glad that I grew up at the time I did in terms of like a lot of things and games being one of them that like when you're, it's like a big deal to like get given a cartridge, like get a game when you get it, like it you know, you really feel the impact of it and everything. And yeah, you're not having, and not as much stuff was coming out, so you're not, it's not as easy to access all the knowledge and the reviews and everything. Like you would read them, at most you would read a magazine and then it would show up on the shelf at Target.
Yeah.
And then that would be the thing that you would play for 6 months. Like you weren't really aware of these like billion other things that were out there, and you also weren't expected to spend perhaps double the amount of money over the lifespan of it to have the same experience as everyone else.
Yeah. I don't know.
Anyway, so you can get the rest of this episode later on if you pay $4 more.
So that kind of leads into, I guess, maybe one of the questions that we had about consoles.
Yeah. Okay.
Do you want to take the reins on this?
Well, does someone who's got a phone handy want to read it?
I'm trying to.
I'm literally the only person
speaking
who cannot.
Speaking of us all being the age where we have disposable income, Ben's phone got repossessed because he forgot to pay his bills.
This email is from Morgan, and it reads as follows. Hi, guys. I've been listening to the show for a good 6 months.
Thanks for writing in.
My question to you three is, what is your all-time favorite console? They said that theirs was the N64 in it because it was their first ever and has a place.
Yep.
But so I get, what is your all-time favorite console is a question from Morgan. And we thought this was interesting because, like, I mean, I'm looking at it from the way of if I was on a desert island.
Yeah, okay.
That, because my favorite one, I don't, like, there isn't a favorite for me necessarily. There's stuff I've liked on every single console.
So you have to, like, intellectually, like, justify it.
Yeah.
By being in a situation.
I can't have an emotional attachment to something. I have to figure it out coldly and analytically.
Yes.
You're right.
Yes.
You do have to clarify with yourself on what grounds. Because, yeah, like, so that's what made me remember this question was the thing of, like, growing up when we did with gaming, probably the N64 is like right in the sweet spot for me of being the right age and games taking this big leap and, you know, probably the most time before doing the show that I ever sunk into games.
Right.
But it's also full of games that I don't think necessarily hold up anymore.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like that aren't, that would not be as fun to play now as they were back then.
The 64 is a weird, and was weird at the time, I remember, because it had like 10 to 15 fucking amazing games on it. And then everything else was kind of...
like, fine. Yeah, there was a lot of third-party stuff that was, like, okay at best. But again, like, it being of an era where you don't... You know, you're not on the internet, you're not seeing all the reviews, and it's like, you sort of... Your standards are a little different when you're younger. It's like,
oh,
it's a cool racing game. Whereas you're thinking about it now, objectively, it's like, the game was a pile of shit.
Why can you only drive fucking Beetles?
Yeah.
What kind of person... Right. It's no adventure driving a Beetle.
See, I loved that game. Yeah. I really loved that game.
I don't think I ever played it, actually.
And I have no idea if it's actually any good or not, but I remember renting it on a whim going, oh, okay, this is one of the ones I haven't played. Cool, it's fun. Fun racing game. And it had a silly battle mode in it, but I like a lot of that stuff that I was into on that console. Yeah, whereas the Super Nintendo, a console that I got into, like... later in life, I think that catalog holds up, you know, way better.
Right.
But it's not, but I don't have that same attachment to it. I've just continued to, like, you know, go back in on the classics from that over more of an extended period of time.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I could call it my favorite because it doesn't, it's not hitting that pleasure center in my brain when I think about it.
But, and then also what I'm taking into consideration is, like, it's not the best controller that ever existed.
Yeah.
So... it's not my favorite.
Yeah.
You know, like...
Yeah. Like, if you could say every game is on every console, which one would you think is the best?
Right,
just
right.
Purely based on, like, aesthetics and what the controller and all that shit.
Yeah,
that's kind of a separate question, but I think that's interesting.
Totally. I think I'm just trying to balance it all
in my
head.
Mine would be the Nintendo 64. Just the dumbest, goofiest controller.
Yeah.
I was holding one of them the other day.
Oh,
and
boy.
Man, they, like, they're a lot smaller than they were when my hands were child's hands. But it's to the point where it's really uncomfortable. And just the idea of separating the joystick and the D-pad and it, like, those three prongs.
Yeah.
Even at the time of being, you know, impressionable and it being like a futuristic thing.
Yeah.
Even then I remember being like, this doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. They've made it something for an octopus now.
Yeah.
About time they had a video.
Because I had a PS1 and I admit, even at the time, like, not many of my friends had PlayStations, and so it wasn't as fun in that way. People weren't coming around being like, oh, let's all get together and play Tekken 2. Like, everyone wanted to go to the person's house that had the N64.
Yeah.
Having the four controller ports at the time as well was
totally
awesome.
Huge. That was the big,
And so, I loved my PlayStation, and I played it all the time. I fucking, like, just wore it down. Like, I played it so much.
Yep.
And then I would go to someone's place with an N64, and everyone was like, fuck yeah, Smash Bros. And I would pick up a controller, I'd be like, this is fucking stupid.
Yeah, yeah.
I can barely play this console.
Well, then get out of here. Leave my sleep over there, Ben. Jesus Christ.
And I go, and I'd be like, I'm not very good at these games because I can't play this damn controller.
Well, it might sound stupid that I only just worked this out, but the earth is flat. it's just a big bet hedge. Like, you know, they go, okay, we're going to have this 360 stick, but what if all that anyone else makes on it is... platformers and stuff that needs the D-pad. Yeah. What if Mario 64 ends up being the only game that uses this?
Right.
So we'd better play it safe and just still have that there. Which now the D-pad is, we were talking about this recently, just often relegated to scrolling through items. Like, it's very, very, very rarely ever used for control, but I think they just maybe got spooked and thought,
Do you know what's funny with that controller, though? The Sega Saturn had a controller with an analog stick on it before the 64.
Oh, yeah,
right.
And it looked the same as a Dreamcast one, basically.
Yeah, you're right.
Where the stick was up the top, and then you had the D-pad if you move your thumb a little bit south.
Yeah, that's right. And, I mean, Sony hedged their bets even more, because they didn't have a D-pad. I mean, sorry, they didn't have an analog stick initially on the PlayStation. It was just a D-pad. The analog controller was this big thing that came out much later on and was like, you had to buy a new fucking controller when it came out.
I didn't realize this, and I found it out the other day. They did an analog controller and then the DualShock one. So they did an analog one that was the same thing, but with, like, concave sticks. and no vibration.
Right.
That was only around for like 3 months, and then they went, oh, wait, what if this thing could get you off?
Yeah.
And then that's the best controller that's ever been made, to my mind.
Totally.
Through the PS1, 2, and 3,
yep.
That same controller. I don't like the PS4 controller anywhere near as much.
See, I don't see a difference at all.
It's
curvier. I know it is slightly different.
The sticks are placed differently. I don't like the R2 and L2. The touchpad thing is cool and nothing ever uses it.
Right.
That's a shame, but it's fine. But
yeah, I'm with you, Ben. I don't see a difference. And I've never liked the PlayStation controllers. I've always found them like... I'm sure we've talked about this before, but I've always found them like way too angular, like just a bit too, just missing that little kind of comfort of the grip. I think the Xbox ones have always been really good.
Right.
I think the Dreamcast one was great.
That original fucking Xbox controller, I liked it.
Right.
That huge bastard.
Yeah, that's right.
You could club someone to death with.
Yeah.
I mean, you could club someone to death with anything if you try hard enough. But that one, like, but yeah, the 360 controller was fucking great.
Right.
And still is. That's a good one to plug into a computer to use.
I still feel like going back and forth between the PS4 and the Switch, as I do, because those are the two consoles I have. It's, and again, we talked about this recently, but the interface of the Switch and the controller,
yeah.
It's like, I don't know, like, it used to be a lot better, but man, what they have done to, like, the home screen and everything of the PS4, I kind of hate turning it on now.
Yeah.
Like, it actively stops me from playing games. I'm like, I gotta wade through that fucking menu.
Yeah.
I hate the music. It's like it's cluttered. Like,
try having an Xbox One, man. They're the Xbox One has a fucking mess of a
it's
opening screen.
It's really strange to me as someone who's like been a designer or in like interested in design for like, you know, my entire life.
What's your favorite font? Prove it. Name the best 5 fonts.
Futura.
Yeah.
I was always a big Helvetica fan.
Yep.
Okay.
I like Roboto.
Okay.
Open Sans is a really good one. It's one of the Google fonts.
Yeah.
It's like a cleaner, better version of Arial. And you wanted a fifth, didn't you?
Yeah.
You sure did.
Fuck.
Wingdings.
Babus New.
Ooh.
Babus New.
Yeah.
Huh.
No Times New Roman, no love for the classics.
No.
This guy hates books.
I'm sans serif only, thank you very much.
Yeah.
But what was my point?
I'm sans serif. Your point was that, it's crazy how they fuck it. Like,
well, like, there's been great user interface design for like 50 years, and yet consoles have always fucked it.
Yeah.
Until the Switch. I love the Switch.
And especially Nintendo coming out of two consoles in a row where the home screen was like a fucking, like, purgatory thing, where it was just all these like little weird me characters roaming around going, please free us from this prison. What I have to hover the... I have to hover the thing over one of their heads and then the game comes up. Like, they did this for two consoles in a row and then went, guys, we all know this is fucked.
Yeah,
and
it's like pretty cool that sometimes you'll see like a Snoop Dogg that someone made walk across your screen, but we have to change.
But yeah, this one is great and I really hope they... Because the PS4 one, when I first got it, it was fine. Like, it wasn't bad.
Right.
And they just, I don't know, they divvied up. They sort of changed where stuff... especially settings. If you go to look for any kind of settings thing in there, there's like 4 different like places you have to go to change settings and stuff, and it just became so cluttered and overwhelming. Like, I really think it's just a product of time that ends up making it worse. And I hope the Switch just still keeps that main front page as just a row of games on a simple background.
I know what it is for the Xbox One as well, as partly them having a fight between design and advertising space.
Right.
Yeah,
It's not necessarily ads as in like fucking Paul Rudd's in a new movie or whatever. There is a bit of that.
There is, yeah.
But it's like it's Xbox
in
Gold you can get. Hello.
Yes.
And it's... Once you figure it out, it's totally fine.
Right.
But I remember, especially initially, the Xbox One was baffling to me.
I think that it might be in America, like the American versions of the PlayStation interface, it has much more of that as well.
Right.
I think we might escape it, maybe because we don't have the same...
NFL and whatever. There's a lot more of that sort of like... We don't have the same... subscription-based services.
Sure, and the same corporations buying into the interface.
Yeah.
The interface of the PS4 has gotten worse over time because the software is kind of constantly updating.
Yeah.
The machine can't keep up with it and it's getting clunky as well.
I hate the sound design too.
Yeah.
Like I hate the little background music. I hate
the PS3 noise it makes
when it turns on. Yeah.
Very similar.
It was so fucking pretentious, the PS3, to turn on and be like, string quartets.
Yeah, yeah.
The most important fucking video game thing it's ever been made. Like, yeah. that always bothered me. And the cross-media bar, I remember when it came out.
Yeah. That's
right. They were very like, look at what we've invented. And I was like, give us just a list.
Yes.
A list is always easier.
Whereas the Switch is like the sound design of that, like it's very... It's kind of like Apple via Nintendo.
Totally
like,
Apple,
I don't know whether that's deliberately by design or not. Like, so many people have this thing, and the people who have it love it. Let's kind of tap into that psychology and make it feel the same. But it just feels clean and it feels quick and it feels snappy. Whereas, like, all of the sound design of the PS4 one is like these sounds that are just, you know what I mean? They're a bit more drawn out. It feels sluggish to get into things.
I think that every console apart from the Switch. And the other Nintendo ones, they have different problems, but they all have the Mountain Dew and Doritos gamer version of like an interface.
Yeah.
Like it's not elegant or anything at all.
To some extent. I think part of something that's fucked with it for the modern ones is profiles, having them to be signed into that. For the 360 at least, that was often a hassle.
Right.
Of like, hey, you're not signed in, so fuck off.
Yeah, but that's a pain in the ass.
It still does happen here, but they've gotten better. With the Switch especially, just going like, hey, who's playing every time?
Oh, the Switch.
That's smart.
Totally. I was going to say.
It doesn't take fucking forever to log you in.
Yeah, the PS4 has it. The Switch doesn't. The Switch is perfect, I feel like.
Yeah. So to go back to the question of what your favorite console would be, if we were doing this in, let's say... If we were answering this in, say, 4 or 5 years' time, and if the Switch has continued to release, has continued the momentum that it currently has.
That it had in 2017.
That it had in 2017. Yeah. And I continued to travel as much as I did in 2017.
Right.
Then easily my answer would be the Switch.
Right.
Like, in the 1 year and the way that, like, it just fit in so perfectly to my life and... The number of things coming out on it that I've absolutely loved, like if that maintains, there'll be a very strong case for that to be, for that to be my all-time favorite.
Yeah.
But as it is, I probably am still. I'm gonna base my answer on like personal attachment and fond memories, and say the 64 would rank as my favorite.
And you as well, Knox.
If the Switch keeps going in the way it will, then I'm similar in that I would say in 5 years my favorite console will probably be the Sega Saturn. But I don't know. No, for me it's like I think I have to base it on that idea of being on a desert island and what library of games would I want.
Yeah.
From that point of view, it would be either a Game Boy Advance.
Okay.
Because including having all the Game Boy games on it, I used to fucking love that thing.
Right.
Or a PS2, probably. I think the PS2 is... even if you take it for the context of when they came out and where, like the time when they were released, I think the PS2 was fucking crazy.
Yeah.
When it first released, it looked incredible. And then it had probably the best library of games brought out for it over its lifetime.
Right.
I think it'd be that.
Yeah, okay.
But I'm not emotionally attached to it, though. So that's weird. Like if
I was... I mean, you saying the Game Boy Advance, maybe some form of Game Boy would be mine because it's like, but yeah, being a little kid and going on long car trips. Yeah.
That's the emotional answer for me. Is
right.
Yeah.
It's either a Game Boy or a Color in Advance, one of the series of them.
Right.
It's a very emotional answer to say the words Game Boy.
Yeah.
Man, it's smart. Imagine if this was called like the Game Boy Super or whatever, the Switch.
They're
still calling things Game Boys.
Yeah, I kind of wish they'd brought it back and just tethered the
Ultra
Switch to
Game Boy.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Hell yeah.
I
What do you got?
My emotional pick is probably the NES.
Oh, short-circuiting.
how do I express? I think it's the NES. It's the first console I played the shit out of it.
Yeah.
Like, played it over the next generation because we didn't get a SNES or the equivalent. And I still love those games. Like, a lot of those games hold up and I play them still. Like, Super Mario 3 is maybe my favorite game.
Yeah.
And it definitely holds up today. It's an incredible platformer.
Yeah.
But I think I have to say the PS4 because it's got a massive library of games and I love a lot of them. I own like 100 PS4 games and I fucking love a lot of them.
It's crazy to think when, like, I've bought my PS4 in the time that we've done this show and I really ummed and ahed about it. Like, and it's crazy to think that it was ever a consideration, that there was a time where I didn't have one. Because, I was actually thinking about this question today and, like, thinking, there's actually a good case to be made for maybe it is the PS4 because I play a bunch of stuff on it and some fucking massive stuff on there.
And I really do like the controller. I am okay with the evolution between the third one and the fourth one. I've always loved those the most. It's really difficult, though, because I love the Pro Controller for the Switch and I love the interface for the Switch and I love a lot of games on it. It's just that I know there's literally like 104 games on the PlayStation 4 that I love and I like the hardware. It works well. It's a good media center. I like the controller.
Yeah.
It's almost like it just averages out to being my favorite.
Yeah. If you factored in pure hours, number of hours that the console is on, PS4 would be mine because it's what I watch Netflix and Stan on.
Yes, totally.
So, having that all in the one place in your thing, like, I sold my Apple TV about a year ago, so I was like, I have no reason to ever turn this on now because I just do all this stuff through the PlayStation.
Yeah, so, NES is my emotional pick. PS4, I think, right now is just my overall pick. But, same as you guys, if the Switch has a great library in 5 years, then far and away, it's going to be my favorite.
And baby, if that virtual console comes out, desert island bad boy right there.
But I'm going to say right now, I am willing to take a bet that the Switch will not be any of our favorites in those 5 years. There's just something in the water. I mean, in the air. There's something on the horizon that just I'm really feeling crook.
Yes, me too.
About
me too.
I will say the Xbox One has the best controller out of the modern consoles for me.
Better than the Pro controller?
Yeah.
Wow,
I
think
it's the best out of them. Nice. I want to get one of them elite boys.
Ooh.
And also the best console is having a PC. If you're on an island, that is the one you would get.
Yeah.
Well, then you can get on your PC and fucking try and find a way to get off that island.
Yeah. I will be able to Google it.
Yes.
Can you Google something on your PS4? Yes.
Yes. Yes. It'll take you about an hour, but it can be done. So we had another email here from...
Talking about nostalgia and shit, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
From Marcel. The evolution of games, the sort of game you would design, keeps coming up on conversation, but what you haven't seemed to talk about is what you imagined games to be by now when you were a kid.
Right.
Like I was expected much more... I expected much more open... Fuck me.
To be,
is this me having a stroke?
Is written perfectly and... No, this is it's a confusing sentence.
Yeah.
Like it's I was like expected
he,
much...
It's like he woke up from a dream and just quickly had to like race this out. But also I got distracted because he said, what you haven't seemed to talk about... Pay a bit more attention, Marcel.
Yeah, no, maybe he's saying, like, there's probably some subtext there.
Oh,
I think there's a little bit that they're saying, but they're not saying.
Right.
You read between the lines.
I expected much more immersive open worlds by now, like GTA 5 Online, but you walk down a street and you're unable to tell a player from an AI. Proper immersive sandbox where you can truly do anything, rather than just a game that tells you you can do anything, but can actually do 5 things.
Right.
So what did you imagine games to be like in 2018 when you were 10 years old? I was 10 years old in 1996.
Ah, in 1996 I was 9 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was 10 years old, I was in 1999.
Okay,
hell yeah.
Let's make the question, what did you imagine games to be like in 1996? So Nox, you're going to have to go back to being 3, buddy.
Yeah.
No, 6.
7.
let's make it 8.
I'm going to be 10. I'm going to be in 99.
Okay.
The millennium is on the horizon.
Yes.
What's happened? Well, I had that same thing about like, it'd be like, it seemed for a while that the ultimate end goal of video games was to simulate the world perfectly or something.
Yes. Second Life came along and didn't do it properly. Like,
it simulated a better world than we could ever have dreamed of. Yeah. Imagine if you could fuck a fox and get away with it. But that idea has gotten less and less appealing to me over time. of having this like Majora's Mask was a thing at the time. I remember going like, yep, this is a direction shit should be going in. Everyone has a schedule.
Yeah.
Everyone's moving around during the day, doing their own thing, whether you're there or not.
Yes.
And then like Oblivion was kind of the same thing of like,
yep,
they're making their own decisions. And I do not give a shit about that anymore.
Yeah. Right. I remember being really like, it's weird that he sent this because I can distinctly remember a conversation with a friend when we were in probably grade six or something. So like, you know, the 64's out, and because it seemed like stuff was advancing so quickly, feeling like, okay, like, oh, there's going to be a time when you'll just look at a game and it'll just look like it'll just be a real person.
Yeah, yeah.
How crazy is that going to be?
Yeah.
I wonder if that'll, it feels like that could happen within the next 3 years, or maybe we'll never see it happen in our lifetime.
Right.
Like, just really
call
not
Steven
knowing.
Spielberg, get him to make this happen. Yeah. Oh, it sounds great.
Not really knowing, like, where, like, how it was going to pan out and at what kind of time frame.
Yeah.
I don't remember. I think it's interesting that Marcelo is saying he, at a young age, was specifically thinking about the way that the games would play and the way that the environments would be.
Right.
Because all I could really think about was, like, the look, and I didn't really know what that would mean for gameplay. I guess I just kind of assumed, like, maybe it'll all still be just the same, but it'll look like real life.
Right.
And then as I got a bit older and it started to get there, I was like, oh yeah, I wonder if you'll reach a point where it's just, yeah, there's no interface, there's no buttons, there's no, which, yeah, I mean, I don't think we will get to that point, and I don't know that I want us to get to that point.
No, because it's, I remember having a similar thought of like, I wonder if games in the future will all be made in the same engine and like everyone will use the same trees and shit because they just look real.
Yeah.
So why would you make a new one? And I remember the specific point where I changed that thought was when I saw Wind Waker.
Yeah.
Oh.
And that was the first thing I remember really appreciating the artistic design of it.
That it was like different, so different to everything else.
I guess
at
Jet
the time.
Set Radio had been before that and stuff like that, but Wind Waker was the thing where, because Zelda was moving in that realistic direction.
Yes.
Right.
And when it came back that way, it went, ah, that's actually cooler.
Yeah.
Over time, I can't remember.
Nox, off the top of your head, do you know when GTA 3 came out?
It would have been 2001.
Okay, so that's after I... Basically, before that came out, that was my vision of the ultimate video game.
Yeah. Right.
As close to... And even at the time, like, I'm not thinking, this isn't quite realistic. You can't go in every building. I'm thinking, holy shit, this is a city, living, breathing city.
Living and breathing,
people walking around.
My mother's my sister. Like, that's when you look back on it now.
I know, right? But that's the thing. Up until and during that game being the biggest game in the world, that was my vision of the ultimate game. And then once it came out, I think I expected it to get more interactive, more detailed. Not necessarily that the story was going to be better and better and more have more depth or more creativity, just that the worlds were going to get more interactive and more detailed. And they were. Vice City was slightly more interactive and more detailed. San Andreas, when that came out, it fucking blew my mind.
That was another
pinnacle of gaming to me. And so that was what I thought games were going to get to before it. And now, I still think that's kind of my ultimate...
They kind of have.
Yeah,
as well,
yeah.
Like Assassin's Creed Origins and shit like that you've enjoyed recently is the
next step along that evolution. And that's still kind of... And I know that, like, movies and TV shows have represented this ultimate game as, like you said, the real world. You're in it. You can't tell the difference between
it. It's always called, like, everything or whatever in the dumb Black Mirror episode.
And again, there's no interface. You're just interacting with this virtual world.
Yeah.
And I don't know that that's definitely not the thing that I want. Like, I still think if it was like the fucking Oasis in Ready Player One, maybe I'd love that. I'm still not sure because it hasn't quite got there.
No, I had a feeling that, like, at a certain point, like, oh yeah, interfaces will kind of disappear, and like I was saying before, but then, so once stuff started to get a bit realistic looking, I was like, oh, this can only be around the corner, and then it's not heaven, and I don't think I don't want it to happen. Like,
right.
I think there's such a great charm in something that looks really realistic, but is still prompting you, like, hey, you got to push X now.
Right.
Like, I don't, like, it would be, I don't know how you would do it, like VR or whatever. Like, I just think, to me, at that point, you're not, I mean, we still, you know, those of us who play games or have done for a long time, like we, that's still pushing a button and it being a D-pad or whatever else it is, a set of buttons and prompts on the screen. That's the stuff that we remember and that's the anchor for us.
Right.
So if you take all of that away and it's like you've got a headset and gloves on, I think for our generation, it's like that wouldn't feel like a video game anymore. It wouldn't, you know what I mean?
No,
like you've always still got this like anchor that is kind of like based on something that's deep, deep, deep kind of buried in you that's been a part of, you know, your life for whatever, 20 years at this point.
And you're looking for chess, you're looking for ancient shit. Like it's something in the human brain, right?
Yeah.
Because we've had them all. Like you want a set of rules to constrict you and then to work within them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
sure.
You know what's an interesting, like, sort of middle ground between the two things we're talking about is PUBG, and I think that's part of why it's gotten so appealing,
right?
Is because it's very video gamey. It's very, you are pointing a gun and clicking it to fire at somebody. Mm-hmm. It's like the most classic style of game. It's
real dopamine hit style thing of picking up extra weapons and
real
simple,
like, yeah, it's simple to understand. You are pointing and clicking
at
something, but it has this organic feeling to it as well, because you're trying to outsmart other people,
right?
And you're trying, like, the way that it moves is very natural feeling, and you don't, it doesn't feel like you're on a grid or digital. It feels,
that's the thing though, like you mentioned chess.
Yeah,
chess is incredibly structured and mechanical, but again the appeal is the mental battle that's happening.
Totally, yeah.
The
yeah.
interaction between you and a real person, and that's that's what PUBG is, which is another whole different thing.
But then it's so intricate, because it's not these, you know, how many chess pieces are there? Several. And it's not like this very small set of rules that chess has. It's this enormous, very layered set of rules that you can't predict accurately necessarily.
Right.
So it's like this improvisational sort of thing that is really appealing. But it never feels unfair.
That, yeah.
You're not necessarily aware of what the rule set is.
Right.
But it's close enough to life that you can intuit it.
Right.
Yeah.
I guess.
That, and that human element, I remember, like, the 64, something that I was hoping would happen with games. I liked Mario Kart. I liked GoldenEye. Like, you know, that was the first console where you could play with four people. And that was, like, a really big selling point of it. Especially, like, people of our generation. Like, that was such a huge thing. And it just felt like really the only games that came out were, you know, racing games or shooting games.
Yeah.
Everything was kind of in a box. Then there were things like Mario Party where it's like, oh, this is really fun and different. But my hope was always like, man, I would love to just see really surprising, weird, different, like silly mechanics in these kinds of things.
Yeah.
And that's kind of happened a lot more, even just in the last couple of years with indies, where they can just go, here's a simple fun idea that's for four of you to fuck around with on the couch together.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I kind of really wanted, like just heaps more super fun, silly four-player games that was like, yeah, not just a racing game, not just a shooting game, but like something different going on that kind of took you a little while to learn, or like a,
right,
you know what I mean? Couldn't sort of super simply be summed up.
Yeah,
yeah, you know what can be super simply summed up? The sponsor for this week's episode.
Oh, well, I didn't have another point to make, so luckily I'm not annoyed that we're going into this. I was just going to say very, very quickly the thing of, yeah, I did think of that thing of everyone's in the game all at once and never predicted how much, when that happened, people would fuck it.
Yes,
by,
right?
Like, VR chat and all that sort of shit. Like, people immediately, you put a bunch of people in there and like, let's make this the worst shit we possibly can.
Yeah.
Anyway, speaking of worst shit, let's talk about the opposite.
Yeah.
Some good stuff.
Yeah. Some stuff we genuinely fucking love.
Yeah. HelloFresh is our sponsor again this week. If you don't know what HelloFresh is, I can tell you right now. It helps solve the what's for dinner debate by delivering delicious, fuss-free recipes with the exact pre-proportioned fresh ingredients you need to cook them from scratch.
Hell yeah, my dude.
You need these ingredients. You can't fucking improvise.
No, you shouldn't.
What are you, Anthony Bourdain? No.
Yes. Oh, sorry.
You need
I
guidance.
Improvised the wrong answer.
You didn't have the ingredients for that conversation.
Yes.
And it's fuss-free and it's fresh food and it's delivered straight to your door and then you prepare it.
Yes.
And it's fun to do.
Oh, totally. I love to cook and I hate to go grocery
Not
shopping
cook.
After work. Yeah, yeah.
You've got different preferences. You can do veggie preference here in Australia, whether you're pescatarian, a flexitarian, gluten or dairy-free, our classic box.
What's a flexitarian?
I think it's someone who kind of like vegetarian for a month and then not.
Okay. It's a normal person.
Yeah, yeah. I think that's what it, like, sometimes I eat vegetables, sometimes I don't.
Okay.
That's a normal person.
Now,
I only eat biceps.
Yeah, right?
Flexitarian.
Yeah, yeah. You've guessed what it means.
Do you want me to Google it?
No, no, no. I just like that you took a real big stab and were like, I'm just going to say what I think it is.
I'm with Knox. I reckon that's what it is.
Yeah, really?
You should back the fuck up.
I would never.
No, you keep reading the copy. I'll Google it.
Okay. Nah, I'm Googling it because flexitarian.
Something I got a lot of shit for doing a couple weeks ago. Interesting.
Yeah. And that wasn't even during an ad.
Okay. What is a flexitarian? This is on Yahoo Answers, so this will be correct. Flexitarianism is a term used in the United States to describe the practice of eating mainly vegetarian food, but making occasional exceptions for social, pragmatic, cultural, or nutritional reasons. So it's a vegetarian who's a fucking pushover.
It's just a normal person.
You're flexible. That's what it is, flexitarian. You're flexible.
If you do that and
what we immediately said from the word.
If you do that and that's how you describe yourself.
Yeah.
Just
one of the good things about HelloFresh, it's easy to get into arguments, as we've just made, but this reduces it by getting rid of that what's for dinner debate, because they send you a bunch of different recipes, all the ingredients, and they're all fresh, and they do taste really good.
Yeah, we mentioned this last week. They sent us a trial of this, and all three of us loved it.
Yes. Yep.
I got it sent to my parents' house, and I went down there and had one of the things with them.
Nice.
Two of them. Really great. So whether you're a meat lover or a vegetarian, or something in between.
Oh, they're coming back around to this.
There's no busy word parent, maybe, an aspiring cook. HelloFresh have got recipes for every taste.
I'm an aspiring cook.
Aspiring parent.
I'm an smiling man.
I'm perspiring at how bad that was.
Pick a box that works for you. Blah, blah, blah. You get it. But
no, not blah, 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 blah. You get it. These people are paying us money.
Yeah.
This isn't an email from a beloved listener that you can just skim over.
Yeah. Love the show. Blah, 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 blah. Here's the code. Sign up here.
They saw all the ingredients they need and deliver them pre-measured in an insulated box to make sure it's fresh if you're not in. That's an
which
important point.
I get home work from work. I get home, I work, and then it shows up. No, I get home from work and I got the box. It was like sitting there all day.
Mm.
Get it in. It's all fresh. It's all cool.
And they got some little cold packs in there that you can reuse, which is very environmentally conscious.
Indeed.
Yep. There's very little package. Like, there's only the bare minimum amount of packaging. There's not a lot of waste.
Yep.
Step-by-step recipe cards that will help you create a huge range of delicious dishes from around the world.
Oh, and did we mention this in the last ad we did for them? I think this is one of my favorite things about this service, is that you certain ingredients, they just send you what you need. So, you know, if you look up a recipe, you go out and buy a thing that you need one tablespoon of, and it just sits there and you never end up using it again until you throw it out.
Yeah.
This cuts down on that. We literally just get a sachet of like exactly what you need.
We talk about that a lot, how we end up buying a bunch of stuff and then it just starts to go to waste in the bottom of the fucking fridge.
Yeah, well, because you and I both live alone separately. And I fucking hate having to buy like garlic and shit. I mean, garlic doesn't really go off.
No, I get
mushrooms.
Mushrooms, spring onions. It's like you're not going to use a whole bunch of spring onions and you don't.
Produce is a real killer.
Yeah.
Their recipes are family friendly and been created with busy parents in mind.
Yeah, take no swearing.
No F's and C's in this spaghetti bolognese.
They take the hassle out of meal planning, prep and cooking so that you spend less time planning meals and more time enjoying them.
You know what I particularly like? I didn't even realize it until I just thought about it. The recipe cards are great because when you're looking up a recipe on your phone or even on your iPad or whatever, there's a whole bunch of like scrolling and it's closed and you got to open up the thing again.
Yeah.
It's just really, really handy.
Yeah.
Well, so if you want to try it, all of their you can
did Marcel write this?
If you want to try it, HelloFresh will give you 50% off your first two boxes if you use the code CASUALS.
Indeed.
So that's pretty good. And also, you can have a flexible subscription after that.
Nice.
So if you want to skip a week, if you're going away, or if you just don't feel like it, you can skip, pause, or cancel your subscription.
Yeah, real flexitarian.
all of the ingredients they send are pre-measured, so there's absolutely zero food waste, like I said. And they've been created, tested, and reworked by their professionally trained team of in-house chefs. So deliciousness is a guarantee.
Nice. In-house chefs.
It's like not random. It's a guarantee.
Yeah.
In-house chefs is, they just sound like these guys are just being held captive.
I know, I know. Almost like they work there.
It's what it is, you're captive.
Yeah.
Capitalism is the real prison. So you can try HelloFresh with 50% off your first two boxes by using the code CASUALS. And we all recommend that you do.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, big fan of them.
So and huge thanks to HelloFresh.
Yeah, they've supported us, so support them and you'll get a bunch out of it yourself.
Yeah.
It's great. Now, back to the topic at hand.
One more thing I wanted to say. You mentioning GTA.
Yeah.
I reckon there would be a lot of people who would feel similarly to you that GTA is kind of like the benchmark of what you consider, like what you think about as futuristic gaming before it comes along.
Right.
Because I had that exact same thing, and with all of those games, not that I necessarily like, I hadn't played any of them until 5, but I had friends who had them, and just seeing it was like, at the time, like I remember GTA 3 being like, it's 3D and you're walking around and it's this whole city, and so your first question is, right, so you can just go into any building and do whatever? No. Yeah. But they're getting a bit closer to that each time. It's like it kind of expands in a way, and now with the online component to 5, it's like, again, getting one step more to this, like, I guess what people have in their head is like the ultimate futuristic ideal of a video game.
Right.
And it makes me really curious, like, yeah, what, like, it feels like it's always kind of like led the way in terms of like open worldy sort of, and that vision of how grand things can get. And it just makes me think like, yeah, so 6, like what's going to happen?
Even
like,
Red Dead Redemption 2, which is the next one from them, which like, and that is a whole nother angle on it, because that is the interactivity, the open world, the feeling like you're in another world.
Yeah.
But in a different time period, you get to be in like this whole, like this other genre of entertainment.
Mm.
And that is a whole nother angle on it, which, yeah, No Man's Sky is the one that I keep thinking of, because it's, before it was released, everyone thought it was going to be the absolute ultimate video game.
Yeah.
Get in a spaceship, fly it through infinite galaxies, infinite planets.
Yeah.
It's all interactive. You can, and it's like,
but then Sean Murray lied to you.
Yeah. Well, and like, I really like it still, but people had this like incredibly unattainable idea of what it could be.
I think because, I mean, what people were looking for in that was more structure. Like, they weren't looking for what it was giving of this infinite thing. People want, no, I just want infinite heaps of good games I've already got.
Sure. People wanted like what it is. And then on top of that,
what it is, my dude.
The impossibility of detail, curation, and artistry in these infinite worlds and infinite planets and infinite, you know, caves and cliffs and mountaintops.
World of Warcraft hit closer to that in terms of effect.
Sure.
I mean, not scale, but effect.
Yeah. You know?
There was a good 3 months there where No Man's Sky was like actively being pushed by blogs and websites and everything is like, this is going to be everything to everyone all at once. This is going to be a universal consciousness that you tap into, and then your head just explodes in a beam of light. And then
the first piece of art that everybody likes.
It really felt that way. Like it, and it's not, of course it got crushed under the weight of that. Like how could it not?
Yeah.
I guess, I guess Breath of the Wild is, I'm trying to think, because having not played Red Dead 1, is that a situation where if you go into a town, are there buildings there that are just for show that you can't go into?
No, but they're pretty... Oh, actually, in the city, yes.
Yeah.
There's that city bit to the northeast, yes.
Because I think Breath of the Wild might be the one thing where you can go... I mean, this is the case because the villages are quite small.
Yeah.
But you can go into every building that exists in the game, you can go into. Every mountain that you see, you can get up. Like, every... Yep. Every square inch of that game you can inhabit as the player.
The Witcher 3 came pretty fucking close to that.
And Red Dead Redemption, like up until the city, which is quite near the end, it's basically like if Zelda had a big city in the center that you couldn't interact with, but everything else...
It kind of did.
And it kind of did.
Yeah.
So because you have had so much freedom and interactivity throughout the rest of Red Dead, having a few city buildings that you couldn't go into, you don't care.
Yeah, no, totally. Yeah. But it's the other thing where it's like someone going to about GTA 3. Oh, can you go into any building?
Yeah, right.
No. Oh, well, it's not truly free. It's like, do you want to go into every building? Like, what, you want to just fucking walk up 40 flights of stairs and just, like, have a peek at all the offices? Yeah. Like, you wouldn't do this if you could.
Can you play it, and can a man expect to earn the sweat of his own brow? Then it is not truly free.
Yeah, but it's like, before now, you couldn't drive a car around a city and, like, jump over an aeroplane. Now you're nitpicking, you can't go into every building.
I mean, it's just kind of a bit of human nature, isn't it? It's like Marcel going like, oh, I mean, you know, I sort of thought I'd be able to tell the difference between a human and a robot by now.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of never living up to expectations.
Yes.
And appreciating what you do have.
Yeah.
Our third question comes from Thomas. If both of you, I used to work with him, by the way. Hi, Tom. Well, in the same place. I didn't work with, we worked for different companies.
Right.
If both of your arms got chopped off, what games would you still try to play and how? Dance Dance Revolution is the obvious one, I feel like.
Sure.
That is mainly foot-based anyway.
Yeah. So what are you, so you're going to have to go, I mean, VR would probably be good, but it would need to be one that doesn't use the move thing. Or you could have a system where you're like that bad improv game. Sorry, like that improv game where you've got your arms behind your back and someone else has like got their arms through. Yeah. So they're holding the move for you and you'll be able to see it in your vision.
The ultimate couch co-op.
Good luck doing that on a couch.
Well, yeah.
No, we have to sit down to do this one.
Some kind of sex swing operation to get that to be viable.
This has always been interesting, like, games for people who have physical disabilities.
Yeah.
Right.
Because, like, they've made controllers that you can use with one hand.
Yep.
But, I mean, that's a pretty specific one. Like,
yeah,
there's a guy on YouTube who's played through Ocarina of Time and he's blind.
Yeah.
I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, yeah. I read about him. I don't know if it's the same. I think it's, maybe it is the same guy. He did the same thing with Abe's Odyssey.
Right.
Yeah. And he talks about how, like, the sound design in that is such a big part of it for him because you can tell the different terrain makes different noise.
Yeah.
Anything that's going on the screen, like the bad guys make sort of specific sounds.
Yeah.
There is a very obvious, I mean, they are blind, aren't they? Or they can't see very well because you can hide from them very easily in smoke.
No, they can see you.
Yeah, no, right. They can see you. Yeah, yeah.
But there's a thing
the
where you're...
squid things.
You just go behind in a shadow and they can't see you.
Right.
And if you're above them, they won't notice you.
Yeah, and you're flicking those little, your coins or whatever your little things are
little
that make
peanuts.
Noises. It's all very, like, it's really, really sound-based. Mm. And yeah, it did kind of freak me out to think about that. Like, if something happened abruptly to me, like...
Yeah.
Fucking not being able to play games would, I feel like most other things would be a hassle, but I could make do. But you wouldn't be able to play games at all.
You kind
like
of ideally need full use of, well, not all your senses. You don't need to smell a game. That's what I thought games would be like when I was a kid.
Yeah, smell-o-vision.
Smell-o-vision.
We'd be up to Fart Man 6 by now.
Yes.
There's not a hell of a lot. There are a few of the like games that have been made that are specifically audio-driven. Too that
right.
you can
yeah
the,
right
designed to be played if you only can hear them.
I mean, if I didn't have any hands, I'd use a mouse. I'd play strategy games, maybe, you know.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like I'd have a mouse in my mouth and I'd click it with my teeth.
I would get into adventure games and stuff like that and just have someone else play them.
Yeah.
And just make the decisions.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Telltale games.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
You know,
that'd be the one
YouTube
that would be perfect.
Playthroughs of games.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why not?
Because I just watch movies. I wouldn't play games anymore.
I would become one of those people who's fucking amazing at Dance Dance Revolution.
Yeah.
Which
nice.
Is probably hard to dance without your arms. Oh, tell that to the Irish. So, never mind.
The next time you're in an arcade and you see someone with no arms on a Dance Dance Revolution machine, you're like, I see what's going on here.
Nice. Yeah. Flatly VR. Lord of the Dance Dance Revolution.
I don't think I've ever played Dance Dance Revolution.
Me neither. I have no desire to. I don't like to dance.
I think I have once and gone, never again.
It seems impossible for the way my brain works to figure it out.
Right.
How to dance in public.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nothing quite like, see, any of those machines, the drumming ones, any of those ones that are in arcades, nothing like being present for a couple of people turning up and just absolutely owning the machine.
Yeah.
Like it's a sight to behold. Yeah. Where it's like they just seem like they're able to operate in slow motion while the rest of the world goes at full speed.
Yeah. This guy's incredible. It's like I'm in the Chicken Payback video.
Yes, I was going to bring that up.
Wow.
Go and watch it. It's a great song as well.
It is a great song,
Our fourth and final question for today.
Yes.
We're almost out of time.
Certainly are.
Mm-hmm.
Is from Geraldine. What is the... And I think this is really interesting. We each have to pick our favourite game.
Okay.
what is the biggest flaw in your favourite game of all time? So first of all, what would each of our favourite games of all time be?
Yeah.
Fuck. Good. Good lord.
Well, we've said it heaps on the show, but Breath of the Wild and its system of how you cook and those little things where you have to like...
Great call,
anything that is like the best thing of it is that it's so immersive but then the way that you do stuff is by pausing, freezing time, and scrolling through a very kind of basic, bland menu.
Especially in Breath of the Wild's case of adding each apple to your hand individually. Yeah. Like, when you can immediately go, why not, let me just pick five.
Yeah.
When you can straight away go, I know how to do this.
Yeah.
Better. But you can't do it all in batches. The fact that they never changed that got to be very frustrating as time went on.
When you come up with a recipe once, have a recipe book.
Yeah.
And then you can just remake them. And if you've got the items in your inventory, they come out and it happens.
Yeah.
I
didn't mind so much the fact that you had to remember, like, because you can almost look at that as like a deliberate design choice of like, well, he doesn't have a recipe book with him.
Yeah,
like
He's got a big fucking iPad.
That's very true.
Yeah.
But I was able to kind of rationalize it that way, where I was like, okay, this is like this kind of fits the vibe of survival, but not being able to just go do eight of these.
It was just
at
so
once.
Slow.
Yeah, yeah. It just took forever for a thing that's like, you know, I like watching the little animation and everything. It just was like, this is taking me out of it and is not really meant to be the point. Because everything takes ages in that. I've walked here for ages. I'm about to climb for ages. Like, streamline this. Like, it's fine.
Yeah.
That's the main one of recent memory that jumps to mind for me.
What's the biggest flaw in Final Fantasy VII?
Oh, yeah, that's my favorite game. I wasn't even thinking about that. I was thinking about Red Dead Redemption. I was thinking about some of the saving, the having to lay the tent down and all that kind of stuff. The mechanic wasn't quite perfect. Honestly, the biggest flaw about it is that it's not been remastered and is on the PS4.
Yeah, having to bend down and skin all the animals and that taking a little bit of time.
Yeah, that's pretty time-consuming.
Some of the stuff in Mexico felt like filler.
Yes, yeah.
As well, some of those missions.
The pacing was a little bit off, I guess, yeah.
The pacing of the story, because it was a great main story, the best one that Rockstar have done.
Yeah.
And
that's true, actually. It slows down in Mexico, then ramps up way too quickly at the end, I think.
And I loved the bit after the first end, where you're in the ranch and everything. So, the pacing of that, I think, is a big flaw. Do you want to pick one for Final Fantasy VII?
Yeah. Jeez. It is a very convoluted story. Also, kind of racist treatment of the black character in it.
So that's probably the biggest flaw. That's behind the convoluted story for you.
No comment.
It took ages to get to the racism. And also the racism itself, I guess.
Literally, that one has a chance to redo it.
Yeah.
Redo all of their stuff. Like, I guess.
Oh, God, wait for the outcry if they...
Yeah.
They're damned if they do and damned if they don't.
Yeah, totally, totally.
They are fucked either way.
Yep, it's another way of saying what Tommy said.
Yeah, but... it's more fun way to say. True. I'm also maybe trying to stall so I can think of what my favorite game is.
Yeah, I really struggled with that.
Because there's like different ones in different contexts.
I was thinking Bioshock Infinite, the way that the combat is not very good and it also isn't very, it doesn't gel with the story particularly well either.
It's interesting though. That's
another great one for if you play it when the DLC is already out, it's a better game.
Yes, yeah.
It's interesting too for how something that like, you know, the cooking thing I was saying in Breath of the Wild, in any other game, that would kind of probably be a big enough reason for me to just, like, not like it at all and not continue with it. Like, a little mechanic that in any other game, that you can have, like, a pretty big complaint about something.
Yeah.
Like, you saying, oh, the pacing of Red Dead Redemption and the story is a bit, it's like, that's hearing that in isolation sounds like, oh, so you don't like it? But it's like, no, it's still my favorite thing ever.
Yeah.
It just is, like...
We've had
this big floor is there. Yeah.
And it's not even that big. Like, we're being nitpicky because of the question.
For the sake of it, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe the first Deus Ex is my favorite game.
What about Metal Gear Solid 3? Isn't that like...
It could be Metal Gear Solid 3. All right, I'm going to do those two.
Okay.
Deus Ex is fucking, like, clunky and just, like, awkward and glitchy.
Right.
In some point. But not really.
That's, yeah.
But then it's got a little bit of filler too. And I think if you played it today... The voice acting is kind of dopey and that sort of stuff. Like, it just hasn't aged well.
But I guess maybe if I was going to rephrase the question, like, a game that you love, in spite of the fact that it has a glaring flaw that in anything else would mean that you'd stop playing it.
Yeah.
But
here it is for Metal Gear Solid 3. That game is awkward as fuck to control.
Right.
It had an outdated form of control, and then they changed the camera and everything in the subsistence version, which was like the re-release.
Right.
So it was to the point where they, when they put the game back out, they were like, we can't put it out like this.
Yeah,
because
right.
it's not like the original top-down version of it is a little archaic to play, and the bosses are not really.
Metal Gear is a tough one because it's such an idiosyncratic series.
Yeah.
as a whole.
Like, it's like saying like, oh, the flaw in her face is that mole, but it's, you know, that actress where the mole is like the thing.
Yeah, yeah. Picasso, you know, I mean? Couldn't draw faces properly. Yeah.
If you were going to answer this about any game on the Nintendo 64, it would be the camera.
Yeah,
the camera
right.
is terrible. Any
right.
platformer,
right.
the camera is terrible, and at times makes it so that you die extremely unnecessarily.
What about right. this? In the few minutes we have left,
yeah,
this version of the question: is there a game without a flaw?
Oh no! Did you bring that up because we have like 2 seconds left?
No. We've got a few minutes. I mean, I honestly, before I started picking apart Red Dead Redemption, I probably would have said,
yeah,
like. Because the pacing's fine. It's like it's just slightly off. And it for the time that the mechanics that I have an issue with that were slightly glitchy or not perfect were really... It was a nitpick. You really had to be looking for a problem to be annoyed by it.
Yeah.
Like, it's 99% perfect.
Probably Tetris.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't like the whole Russia thing.
Well, it has to start speeding up.
Yeah, no, Tetris is probably...
I like it.
Mario 1?
Mario 1, yeah.
But I don't know.
Oh,
I'll tell you a game without a flaw. Pilot Wings.
Very good.
Because you're up in the sky, you motherfucker.
Oh, the
There's
floor.
There's no floor, you
yeah,
son
yeah, yeah.
of a bitch.
Yeah. No, I heard you. Yeah, I mean, the other thing is, like, it's... hard for us specifically to answer because
we haven't played every game.
We're in the business of nitpicking now as
exactly,
well.
Exactly. Yeah. Like that, what I said about Zelda, if I wasn't in a position where I was like coming in to discuss it in this way, I maybe it wouldn't have jumped out at me. Like
sure.
maybe I wouldn't have noticed and maybe I wouldn't have played other stuff that makes that stuff a bit more streamlined where I go, oh, this does stick out now. Like, it may well have been the one thing I played last year if I wasn't doing a podcast.
Yeah.
I think there's probably a racing game that I would, like, maybe, like, Ridge Racer 1 or some shit
right.
like that, you know? Like, maybe like, Street Fighter 2.
Sure.
That maybe doesn't have...
But then you can say, I would say, subjectively, I didn't like the way it controlled compared to Tekken.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that is... completely.
To me, Mario Kart 8 is pretty flawless.
Yeah.
But then if you're someone that loves online, you can't voice chat.
Yeah.
You can't do all this stuff because it's a Nintendo game. But as a fun racing game, there's not really anything wrong with it.
I honestly think Tetris is probably the pick.
Yeah.
So Tetris is the flawless game.
So
there you go.
Yeah.
The Filthy Casual's best game of all time, Hellblade, Senua's Sacrifice.
All right. We better wrap it up.
We did it, guys. Now we've only got to do this another 3 times in a row.
I actually really liked this.
Yeah, this is fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you've got any questions, filthycasuals.pod@gmail.com is our email address.
Yes.
Yep. Chuck them as comments on this episode on Facebook, on our Facebook page as well.
Yeah.
We got to 4.
Yep.
This time, so
you've heard what good content comes out of.
Yeah.
Try to not make them what's your favorite game series.
Yeah.
But there's some, I don't know. But assume that we've thought of that question.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
also have
talked about it multiple times on this
podcast. This was good. So stuff like this is kind of
what's your credit card number?
Yeah.
Yep. That's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
6-9.
Wow, you got one of the first credit cards.
Yes.
Guys, thank you very much for listening. Yeah, filthycasuals.com.au for information about all this stuff that we have coming up, as well as our Patreon.
Yes.
Links to all that sort of stuff.
There will be a new Bandcamp premium episode up by the time, between when you're hearing this and the next episode.
Oh, yeah, so keep an eye on the socials for that.
Yeah.
Should we say what it was? It was...
I don't know.
It was extremely fun to do.
Yeah.
And like this episode, we got to talk expansively about some things we haven't talked about before.
Yeah. Why don't you want to say what it is?
I guess we can.
I'm not saying let's do it now.
No, let's do the whole thing again.
It's the history of MS. Like, it's our personal favorite MS-DOS games.
Yes.
Yeah. And then we sort of tried to make a top 5 that if you were going to play them tomorrow would still be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So games from sort of like, yeah, early 90s MS-DOS era. So a lot of stuff that we've never, like a lot of games that we've never talked about on the show before, and a kind of era of gaming that is kind of very removed from modern sort of stuff.
We should also say we talked for like almost an hour in that band camp about the context of us playing DOS games, what they are, how they were available. So if you never did, we kind of try to lay it out and give context for it as well.
It was fun.
It was really fun.
It's really fun. A lot of different games mentioned in there. And especially for any younger listeners.
Yeah.
Because PC gaming is now just kind of runs parallel as kind of a, more souped up version of console gaming. But there was a time where it was kind of a completely different thing. And so you might enjoy a bit of a history lesson from three old farts. anyway, that's coming out on the Bandcamp soon, so keep an eye on that. Guys, thank you very much for listening. And as we say here at the end of every episode of Filthy Casuals,
My favorite console was the Atari Lynx, and the only flaw with my favorite console, the Atari Lynx, I didn't own two of them. My only flaw. Nah. Let me take that again.
No.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbroadcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates. It's not optional. You have to do it. We used to go easy on it, but now you have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.